Good morning, committee. I can tell everybody had a good night's sleep. Lots of energy in the room this morning. The Health and Human Services Committee will come to order. Members, please remember to turn on your microphone when answering roll call. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair Burton.
Here.
Representatives Altman.
Here.
Benjamin. Botana.
Here.
Caruso.
Here.
Davis.
Here.
Duran. Garrison.
Here.
Grant.
Here.
Coster.
Here.
Masullo.
Here.
Mello.
Here.
Persons Mullica.
Here.
Rayner.
Here.
Rizzo.
Here.
F. Robinson.
Here.
W. Robinson.
Here.
Cerulli.
Here.
Gidmore.
Here.
Pant.
Present.
Yarbrough. A quorum is present.
Thank you, Cheryl. As we begin the meeting today, I'm going to ask everyone just a reminder to please silence your cell phones. And I appreciate everybody following in-house protocol and wearing masks today. Great job. Also, want to take just a moment and introduce Dr. Christine Kavanaugh. Dr. Kavanaugh is our doctor of the day today. Please, why don't you stand and say hello. Thank you for being with us, Dr. Kavanaugh. We appreciate your service to us today in the legislature, as well as everything you do day in and day out in your work. Members, we do have a couple of visiting members presenting bills, and we happen to have Representative Learned who's here. So Representative Learned, we'd like to ask you to present your bill first. Representative Learned will be presenting House Bill 1097. And Representative Learned, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Vice Chairman, ranking members, members of the committee. Florida is a veteran-friendly state. We have the nation's largest VA healthcare systems, and this House has historically been a leader nationally in taking care of those who served us overseas. House Bill 1097 seeks to honor that tradition by making sure our veterans get the very best care possible while they reside here in the Sunshine State. This bill fundamentally allows Department of Veterans Affairs doctors to treat VA patients while here in Florida. I want to be clear, this does not grant full license reciprocity. It fixes a glitch whereby VA doctors can only treat patients inside of VA facilities and expands their existing license to allow them the flexibility to offer better care for their veteran patients. This bill will help Florida continue to attract the very best and brightest physicians from around the country to fill a critical shortage in our VA system, improve the continuity of care for their patients, and better reach our veterans where they are and where they need to see their doctor. And that, Madam Chairwoman, is the bill.
Thank you. Members, do we have any questions? Okay, see no questions. There are no amendments. We have one card for public testimony. It's Christian Cochran with Veterans Affairs, who waves in support. We're now in debate on the bill. Is there any debate on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Learned, you're recognized to close.
I'll wave close, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Cheryl, please call the roll on HB 1097 and announce the vote.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes. Was that a, yes or no, sir? We're voting on a bill right now.
Yes.
Thank you.
Botana.
Yes.
Caruso.
Me.
Davis. Yes.
Davis.
Yes.
Duran. Garrison.
Yes.
Grant.
Yes.
Coster.
Yes.
Masullo.
Yes.
Mello.
Yes.
Persons Mullica.
Yes.
Rayner.
Yes.
Rizzo.
Yes.
F. Robinson?
Yes.
W. Robinson? Cerulli?
Yes.
Gidmore?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Yarbrough?
Yes.
Chair Burton?
Yes.
19 yeas, 0 nays.
Show the bill reported favorably.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll ask Representative Fernandez-Barquin to come to the podium to present CS for HB 1063. Representative Fernandez-Barquin, you're recognized to present the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, what my bill does is that it basically allows pharmacists, it expands a list of vaccinations and shots that a pharmacist can give to patients. It also allows pharmacists to give children the flu shot to children as young as 7 years old. A frequent question that I got in speaking to members about this bill is how did we get to 7 years old? Essentially, we did an analysis of all the states and the limits that they have, the age limits. And there were some states that had no limits, and then there are some states that had other age limits, but more or less there was a good amount of states that had 7 years old. So essentially, I felt comfortable as a bill sponsor to go with 7 years old. Currently, right now, there is an executive order signed by the governor allowing pharmacists to give children shots as to give shots to children as young as 3 years old. So essentially, this is more restrictive than the EO and limits it to just a flu shot. And I ask for your support.
Thank you, members. Do we have any questions? Seeing none, we have one amendment by Representative Fernandez-Barquin. It's barcode 276901. Representative, you're recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my amendment essentially just changes the ratio of supervision for the pharmacist from one pharmacist to one registered intern to one pharmacist to three registered intern. Now, you may be wondering, what's a registered intern? And registered intern is essentially a student who's studying to be a pharmacist. So it's essentially someone who's eventually going to be a pharmacist.
Thank you. Members, any questions on the amendment? Representative Tant,
In regards to those interns, thank you, Madam Chair. What experience or what how much training have they had on administration of vaccines or other injectables before
you're recognized? They get to this page? Excuse me, Representative, I didn't mean to interrupt. You're recognized to answer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. I'll have to get back to you on the specifics of it, but there are certainly students, and there is a registration process and a required amount of hours to qualify for it to be able to do it. I do have a representative here from the Retail Federation who can also provide more specifics as to that, as to the qualifications for that.
Thank you, Representative. I think we have Representative Caruso has a question as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the bill. Quick question, if the interns are trained on negative reactions to a vaccine, to look for negative reactions to a vaccine?
You recognize?
Representative, do you mean specifically in reference to the children receiving the flu shot?
Children's flu or COVID flu, COVID mm-hmm. vaccine, anything like that?
Well, specifically—
Excuse me, Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you. Sorry, Madam Chair. Within the statute, there is specific recognition of epinephrine. So off the top of my head, I can reassure you that epinephrine is typically on hand with the pharmacist. They are trained to be aware and be observant of negative reactions.
Thank you.
Representative Skidmore, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. Why the jump from one to four? Is it four or three? I'm sorry. Why the jump to a higher number of interns to be supervised?
Excuse me, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, as far as increasing the amount of numbers, currently under the EO, if my memory doesn't fail me, registered interns can give shots, I believe, to children. So this was just something that, as a bill sponsor, I felt comfortable increasing that amount to three. It wasn't unlimited. It's not an unlimited amount. That was another possibility I was looking at, was to just allow the registered interns to be able to give shots without supervision. But this was something that I felt that some sort of supervision was necessary, and I felt comfortable with the ratio, especially with everything that's going on right now in the pandemic.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. It's my understanding, however, that the interns are not giving the shots to the children. Is that correct?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is correct, Representative. It is only pharmacists who are giving shots to the children. I can reassure you of that.
Representative Masullo, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And also in line with her last question, the pharmacist is directly supervising, meaning he or she is on site supervising the interns during their duties, correct?
You're recognized.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, Representative, they are on site.
Thank you.
Additional questions on the amendment? Okay, we have, excuse me. Representative Robinson, you're recognized.
I don't know if my question is to him. I know that Representative Tan had asked about a little bit more details about the actual interns and what it takes for them to actually get into that. And you referenced that someone can give more detail. Is that possible for me to get more information on?
You're recognized, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I promise you that you will have the answer by the end of today.
Additional questions? We do have one card for public testimony on this amendment. That is Joseph Salzberg with the Florida Society of Healthcare, excuse me, of Health System Pharmacists. Mr. Salzberg, you are recognized.
Good morning, Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee. Joseph Salzberg, I am the General Counsel and Legislative Counsel for the Florida Society of Health System Pharmacists, which are your pharmacists that are found in a hospital or a health system setting rather than your customary retail or community pharmacy. We appreciate the sponsor bringing this amendment. And to give some context, registered pharmacy interns is sort of misleading. These are pharmacy students that are either currently registered in a licensed pharmacy school here in the state of Florida, like a Nova or University of Florida, or that have graduated already but have just not yet passed their licensing boards at the Department of Health. Further, these pharmacy interns, which are pharmacy students or graduates, are all registered pharmacy interns with the Department of Health, and there's recourse to suspend or remove them, their registration, similar to a professional recourse from the Board of Pharmacy. And as was alluded to, right now, these folks, it's similar to, you know, my brother's a doctor, Dr. Masuo, somebody who's a medical student, but you're doing rotations under direct supervision of a physician in a hospital. It's very similar to that. These individuals are currently administering vaccines. It's just a one-to-one ratio. And one of the reasons we brought this forward to this committee and to the representative is that the hospital pharmacists that I have a weekly call and I represent are telling me, we'll get an influx of vaccines. We're pulling pharmacists off of their usual duties, whether it's ICU care, COVID patients, whatever it may be. And a lot of those critical cares are kind of falling by the wayside. A 3-to-1 ratio, our opinion, is still protects patient safety. We're not, Texas, for example, has a 6-to-1 ratio. The current CDC guidelines with regard to COVID-19 vaccines has no ratio, just to allow everybody. And a multitude of states, the norm is usually about 2-to-1. We thought that this was a happy medium of getting shots in arms, but not sacrificing patient safety. Again, they still have to be under direct supervision, not remote supervision, but direct supervision. So imagine you have 3 pharmacy students and 1 pharmacist, and they're administering vaccines. I hope that clarifies, but I'm here to answer any questions.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Mr. Salzer?
Thank you.
Thank you for your support. We have no additional public testimony members. We're in debate. Is there any debate on this amendment? Representative Skidmore, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I understand it more in a hospital setting that you would have pharmacy interns be able to administer the vaccines because they're, if something goes wrong, they're in a setting where it can be taken care of. I still have major concerns about pharmacy interns inoculating people in a retail setting, even if there's a pharmacist somewhere in the building. So I'm sorry I can't support your amendment, but if you could change it to just a hospital setting, that would be better.
Additional debate? Representative Grant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to remind the members of the committee that the pharmacists, both in the retail and in the hospital setting, come under the supervision of a medical physician. And if there is a problem with what that pharmacist is doing, it is the medical doctor that is responsible for that. So it's not that they're acting on their own. They're being supervised by a physician who's in charge of that medical care being delivered by the pharmacist, and that trickles down to the intern. So for that reason, I feel comfortable to be up on this amendment. So thank you for bringing it.
Additional debate. See no debate. Would you like to close on your amendment?
We've closed on the amendment.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Opposed, nay? We'll show the amendment adopted. We are now back on the bill as amended. Do we have questions on the bill as amended? No, we have public testimony. Jake Farmer, Florida Retail Federation. Mr. Farmer, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jake Farmer, Florida Retail Federation. On behalf of all the Pharmacy Council of Florida Retail Federation, we'd like to thank the sponsor for this good bill. Just a couple things, and sorry I wasn't able to put a card in on the amendment to address. Right now in the state of Florida, pharmacists and pharmacy interns under current federal and state executive orders are able to order and administer vaccines. And as Mr. Salzberg alluded to, under the current emergency order, actually the ratio is not happening. So moving to 3-to-1 is actually restraining what we currently have in the emergency order. We do believe this provides much access to healthcare. Our pharmacy interns have to go through 20 hours of approved coursework by the Board of Pharmacy and Board of Medicine, as well as same as the pharmacist is doing 20 hours more of continued education. Again, the word intern always makes us go kind of freak out a little bit. I remember our office intern asked to change his email from intern at FRF because no one responded to his emails because that's such a bad conversation when in fact these are students and they are trying to provide a much needed access to healthcare to Floridians. So I'd like to thank you all for that and ask for your favorable support. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Philip Suderbin, Americans for Prosperity, waves in support. Joseph Salzberg, Florida Society of Health System Pharmacists, waves in support. Thank you, members. We're now in debate on the bill as amended. Debate on the bill. Representative Rainier, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Fernandez-Barkin, once again, thank you for bringing this good bill. As I said in the prior committee staff, I really appreciate you bringing this bill. I think that this is about access to care. And unfortunately, we are very blessed to be in this body to maybe not have to utilize a pharmacist. A lot of us in this body have our own personal doctors that we can go to. We're able to take our children to those doctors, but that's not the story for everybody in the state of Florida. And I thank you for this bill. As I said, I'm hoping that this bill, you know, in later years may get expanded. I have friends of mine who are tremendous pharmacists who have stepped in the gap right now, who have administered not only the COVID vaccine, but the flu vaccine and whatever other executive orders, and have, and a lot of times in underserved communities, stepped in a role of a doctor. And obviously, they're not trying to replace a doctor, but we, you know, this is the situation that we find ourselves in. So I thank you for bringing this bill. I thank you for thinking of all of us in the state of Florida with regard to this bill. And I will be up on this bill, and I encourage the other members to do the same.
Additional debate? Okay, seeing no additional debate, Representative Fernandez-Barkin, would you like to close on your bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Rainer. In reference to the adverse reaction, currently under subsection 2 of the statute, it specifically says, in order to address any unforeseen allergic reaction, a pharmacist may administer epinephrine using an auto-injector delivery system within the framework of an established protocol under a supervising physician license under Chapter 458 or 459. The specific language in reference to the established protocol, all the pharmacists administering vaccines are required to have an established protocol by a supervising physician. So just to answer your question, Representative Caruso, yeah, they have epinephrine in case of an adverse allergic reaction. And I ask everyone for their support. Thank you.
Cheryl, please call the roll on CS for HB 1063 and announce the vote.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Duran? Garrison?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Persons Mullica?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
F. Robinson?
Yes.
W. Robinson? Cerulli? Skidmore?
No.
Tant?
Yes.
Yarbrough? Chair Burton?
Yes.
16 yeas, one nay.
Show the bill reported favorably as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Okay. Next, I'd like to call upon Representative Koster, who will be presenting CS for HB 543. Representative Koster, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. The occupational therapy scope of practice has not been updated for over two decades, despite the evolution of the practice. Updating the scope of practice is not intended to expand the scope. Rather, the proposed language is supported by ample research, evidence, published clinical literature, narratives from experienced practitioners. The proposed language focuses on three key changes: more fully defining the practice of occupational therapy and encompassing all areas in which occupational therapists currently practice, explaining the role occupational therapists perform in supporting mental health services, and adding terminology to recognize the growing number of occupational therapists practicing with a doctorate degree. That is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, do you have any questions for Representative Koster? Seeing no questions, we have no amendments, public testimony. We have one. It's Anita Berry, Florida Occupational Therapy Association, Wage and Support. We're now in debate on the bill. Members, is there any debate on this bill? No debate. Representative Koster, would you like to close on your bill?
I will waive close, Madam Chair.
Cheryl, please call the roll on CS for HB 543 and announce the vote.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Durian? Garrison?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Koster?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
F. Robinson?
Yes.
W. Robinson? Cerulli? Skidmore?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Yarborough?
Yes.
Chair Burton?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
Show the bill reported favorably. Okay, Representative Garrison. Representative Garrison, would you please, you're recognized to present CS for HB 485.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Florida has long faced a shortage of certified nursing assistants in our long-term care facilities. The pandemic has taken that staffing challenge and turned it into a public health crisis over the past year. In March of 2020, ACA used its emergency authority to authorize a new class of temporary nursing home employees to use on-the-job training and apprenticeship to ultimately qualify as a CNA, or certified nursing assistant. These employees were classified as personal care attendants, or PCAs, and they've been a godsend for Florida's nursing homes during the pandemic. CS for HB 485 would codify the PCA program into law and allow nursing homes to continue to recruit, train, and retain quality CNAs who are either unable or unwilling to complete a traditional classroom-based training program, but for whom the PCA option provides a pathway to meaningful employment. Madam Chair, that is the bill, and there is a technical amendment.
Thank you. Well, first we'll see if there's any questions on your bill. Do we have any questions for members on the bill? Do we have a question? No. We're good. So yes, Representative Garrison, please present Amendment 175755.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Amendment 175755 replaces the word may and replaces it with shall as it relates to ACA's responsibility to adopt rules necessary to implement the provisions of the statute. That is the amendment.
Thank you. Any questions on the amendment? No public testimony on the amendment. Show the amendment adopted without objection. We are now back on the bill as amended. One more shot at questions, members. Seeing none, we do have public testimony. Tanya Jackson, United Healthcare Workers. Ms. Jackson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, Representative Garrison. I'm Tanya Jackson. I represent the Healthcare Workers Union, the CNAs that actually do the work here. First, I want to thank Representative Garrison. He's been very open. We've talked probably more times than he would like to have talked with me, but he has always been open in doing so. We understand that there is a staffing shortage in nursing homes. There is one throughout the healthcare industry everywhere. But what we oppose is any dilution of the 2.5 hours of direct care being provided by those certified nursing assistants. This allows the PCAs to be counted in that time, and that is our only opposition to the bill. What we do believe is that there are other ways to address the shortages. We would love to work with everyone on doing so. We stand ready to work with Florida Healthcare, Leading Age, AERP, this body, on doing that. We believe that some of those solutions might be to make CNA training free. I've heard some people say that it costs too much. So there are other ways that we might be able to address that. I know that we're in a tight budget year, but the nursing homes don't have a high enough Medicaid reimbursement rate. So the CNAs are paid on average $11, $12, $13 an hour. That's less than $30,000 a year to do heartbreaking and backbreaking work. I'd like to end with inviting every one of you to work a day along with a CNA. If any of you are willing to do that, I would love to make arrangements for you with some of the nursing homes. Several of the members have done that in the past, and it is an experience that will give you certainly an understanding of what the CNAs do for our most vulnerable residents.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Representative Davis, do you have a question? Ms. Ms. Jackson, would you mind? Thank you. Representative Davis, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. Reading the legislation, there is a position, the personal care attendant versus the CNA. Could you explain that concept for me so I can understand what we're dealing with here?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Absolutely, Representative. So a certified nursing assistant signs up for a course that's governed by the Board of Nursing. The Board of Nursing actually writes the rule for how a CNA, all the rules behind what the legislation says. It's a 120-hour course, 80-hour classroom, 40 hours actually clinical, hands-on, as where a PCA has 16 hours of training. And then has 4 months to either sit for the exam or not. And Representative Garrison, if I've got anything wrong on your bill, please.
A follow-up. So just explain to me the opposition that you have to this bill today.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative, when I first started working for the Department of Elder Affairs in 1991, so I've been in this, in aging services for 30 years now, we had no staffing standards. The 2.5 hours of direct hands-on care, and nursing homes couldn't get insurance. They actually had to self-insure, and that's because they were being sued constantly. There were horrible examples of poor quality care in Florida's nursing homes at the time. So this body and the Senate decided in 2010 to impose staffing standards. And it actually started out at 2.9 hours, and it's been kind of diluted and degraded down to 2.5 now. And our opposition is that it further dilutes that. So we legislate for bad guys, never the good guys. We don't need police. We don't need anyone else if we all behaved ourselves. You know, we wouldn't need speed limits, for instance. But the good nursing homes, they're going to staff properly. And they're not going to hire PCAs to replace CNAs. The bad guys, they probably will. And there are some in Florida. And they will hire more PCAs who are lower paid than they will CNAs in order to balance to increase their profits.
Additional questions for Ms. Jackson? Oh, yes, indeed. Representative Rayner, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I do have about 3 questions. Do you want me to go through each question?
Please.
Thank you. Ms. Jackson, the first question that I have, isn't it true that there are at least 3 ways for a person to become a CNA?
You're recognized?
Yes, Representative. If they've held a license in another state, then they can sit for, they can challenge the exam. You can just challenge the exam if you choose, or you can sign up for the course, the training program.
You're recognized.
And the bill that Representative Garrison has, this creates a fourth way, the PCA, which is an apprenticeship program. Isn't that correct?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yes, it creates, I don't think the bill anywhere says apprenticeship program, but in fact, I believe that's how it works. And that's fine. We're happy with that. That's a good thing. We understand the staffing shortage. We just don't want that time to count the same as a CNA.
One more. You're recognized, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so there's been a lot of conversation about the 2.5. And from what I'm understanding is that you and the organization that you represent have had an issue with the 2.5 even before this bill came to fruition. So essentially, isn't it fair to say that you're wanting this bill to cure the issues that you have with the 2.5 staffing requirement?
You recognize?
Representative Rader, I'm not sure I understand. We would love it to go back to 2.9, if that's what you're referring to, but we know that that bill doesn't address this. So I apologize if I'm missing what the other issue might be with us.
Thank you. We have a couple more questions, if you don't mind. Representative F. Robinson, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. My question had to do with something that you mentioned when you were saying that you were in fear of the nursing homes hiring more PCNRNAs rather than CRNAs. And I guess my question was, my understanding was that they actually had to have CNAs in order to, there was like a partnership or it connected that they had to have the CRNAs in order to have the PCNRNAs. Is that not so?
You recognize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, what this bill allows is it says that those PCAs that are licensed under chapter, I believe it's 211, I'm sorry, my glasses keep fogging up, so I can't see my statutory reference, I apologize. And so it would allow the PCAs to be counted the exact same way that the CNA is. And there is a 1-to-20 ratio for CNAs, but it also now it would include the PCAs in that 1-to-20 ratio, so it doesn't distinguish.
Representative Masullo, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ma'am, I want to thank you and your organization for the hard work that you do taking care of our most vulnerable. And I can tell you, it's a lot of work to be a CNA. My question for you, can you cite for us any incidents of diminution of care based on a CNA or these personal care attendants that you've observed or your society is registered?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, thank you, and thank you for the thanks. Yes, this is a group of heroes that we lost a number of them during the pandemic, and they kept coming to work every day. They are definitely the heroes we want to take care of. We have asked for that. We have some anecdotal information, and I've been in this process a really long time, so I don't like to repeat anecdotal information. I have asked Agency for Healthcare Administration for that, for if there have been any grievances, anything, and I have not gotten that information yet. So my apologies, but I don't want to say what an anecdotal information might be, sir.
Thank you.
Representative Tant, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In regards to the 2,000 PCAs that have been hired since the pandemic, since March, I want to know if you've seen a drop in quality of care, and I want to know if you've seen how many of those have been hired as CNAs.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. Again, anecdotal information, so I apologize. Again, I have asked ACA for that exact information, and I've not received a response yet. Our understanding is approximately 2,000 have been hired, but only about 500 took the test, and out of that, 85% have passed the test, and I'm repeating what testimony has been given in the past, which means it's got about an 85% failure rate for the program. So that means 15 1,700 people have either left the program or failed the exam.
Okay, Ms. Jackson, I'm sorry, but can we clarify your answer to that? I think you said 85% had passed the exam?
Yes, Madam Chair, 85% who have taken it, and our understanding is about 500 have taken it. Again, that's somewhat anecdotal, and I'm repeating other people's testimony, and I'm asking for that information for Agency for Healthcare Administration.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
Representative Benjamin, do you have a question, sir?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're recognized.
And I want to repeat the thanks that has been given with regards to the work that CNAs do provide, especially in care of our elderly folks. But we're talking about staffing. You talked about staffing standards. And so my question is, what is it that the PCAs do as they count towards the 2.5?
Recognize.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Benjamin, they would do things like change beds. I mean, there's a list within the bill of the 16 hours of what the training would be. Some of the conflicts that we see is, for instance, in the rule that governs CNAs, they're only supposed to be treated like a student. You know, there are a number of other things that we think that maybe ACA has even broadly interpreted that nursing assistants, CNAs who aren't certified yet, that are in training are being counted in that 2.5. So there are also some more administrative executive branch things that we're trying to deal with to clarify that, but the PCAs would be doing less than the CNAs.
Madam Chair?
You're recognized.
Did I hear you say that the CNAs who are doing their clinicals, are they included in the 2.5?
You're recognized.
Yes, sir. Currently, ACA has interpreted that, and again, there's some conflict with the rule that we're trying to deal with administratively.
Madam Chair?
You're recognized.
And so for you, what's the added liability based upon the duties performed by a PCA? What's the added liability to the care that they're providing to their patients?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, there's a number of added liabilities. One, the PCAs, like the CNAs, would be working under the nurse's license, the LPN and RNs. So the way the statute and the rule reads, and more importantly the rule, is there should be what they call direct supervision as opposed to general supervision. Direct supervision meaning they should be in the room. So if we introduce the PCAs with the less training to count in the 2.5, and that nurse is not in the room when something happens, then there is a liability toward that nurse and toward their license. Other liabilities are, again, this goes back to our invitation to have you come walk a day with a CNA. When there's something going on, it's all hands on deck. If you've got an 85-year-old elderly man with dementia who has just soiled himself, and he may be combative, it may take three people to care for him. So if somebody's in another room caring for a patient and they all get called out because this gentleman's combative and the PCA gets left in the room with someone else and is not under direct supervision, then there's certainly a risk there as well.
Representative Davis, do you have a question, ma'am? You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Actually, I'm going to sneak in a question and two parts to it. With this personal care assistant, you mentioned how long can this person be in this position?
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, the bill prohibits them from being in the position longer than 4 months.
So no longer than 4 months.
Correct.
So the next, Madam Chair,
you're recognized.
Last follow-up. So the challenge, or what I'm hearing, is you mentioned the challenges you have with the shortage, CNA shortage. So my final question to you is, what is the path for recruitment without this PCA program?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are a number of things that both the industry does and does very well in recruiting CNAs. The union also does things in recruitment of CNAs, but don't let me underestimate the shortage. It is real and it is genuine. There's also a shortage of LPNs and RNs. There's also a shortage of docs that will work in a nursing home. It's just that because the CNAs are the heart of that, their shortage is so much more apparent because they're the ones in the room every day. Nurses go in the room, but it's to do nursing work, you know, wound care, administer meds, those things. But of course, a lot of the nurses wouldn't know there's a wound if the CNA didn't discover it and that the skin was breaking down, those things. And that's one of the things that I would love for this body to sit down. We actually had a group, Silver Solutions, that we'd all worked together, the nursing home industry, AARP, the union, and we'd been working together. And one of our commitments this past summer was to work together on this very issue for things like, let's make CNA training free, let's do other things to increase that ability to recruit. And then the pandemic came up, so we did not get the opportunity to do that together.
Okay, Representative Grant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for being here and testifying. I bet you didn't think you were going to get this many questions.
No, sir.
Just curious, I know you've worked with the bill sponsor. I'm trying to figure out how we got to the point where we have these PCAs being brought in. They need to have 16 hours of training prior to having contact with the patient. Isn't that the same amount of training that you have to have if you're a or still like a starting certified nursing assistant? Can you tell me what the difference is?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And if you could keep your answer brief, I'd like to remind everybody that this meeting is scheduled to end at 10:30. We have this bill and we have a second bill to hear as well. So thank you you're recognized for a brief answer.
Absolutely. It is the same, Representative. That's one of the things that we need to fix administratively. That's what I was saying earlier, that we believe ACA has interpreted that broadly to allow CNA students to be counted in the 2.5 hours, and we believe that's contrary to the rule that's been promulgated by the nursing board.
Members, I'm going to remind you, we're short on time. Representative Skidmore, for a brief question, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very briefly, thank you so much for being here. Understanding that there's a lot of moving parts here and the PCAs aren't doing hands-on until after 16 hours, do you have any estimates of what the time is, the 2.5 is diluted to by including the CNAs in the calculation?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Representative Skidmore, we've asked for some of that information from ACA, have not been able to obtain it at this point. And again, the good nursing homes will not do that. They won't dilute. It's only the others. Thank you.
Representative Tant, brief question, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. In regards to your work with the Silver Solutions on the CNA training being free, can you not work that training into the 16-hour period?
You're recognized.
You could not work 120 hours into the 16, Representative. The CNA actually requires 80 hours of classroom training and 40 hours of clinical.
Representative Benjamin, do you have a question? You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it my understanding that you fear that the bad nursing homes will simply rotate every 4 months new PCAs in instead of paying for CNAs? Is that the fear?
You're recognized.
That is one of the fears, Representative, yes, and that it will dilute the actual CNA
time. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Yeah, didn't mean to cut you off, but short answers. Yeah, so you answered the question. Thank you very much. All right, next we have additional individuals who would like to testify. I'm going to give you 1 minute so we can continue to move forward. Kim Warnicki, Gulf Coast Healthcare. You'll be followed by Rashawn Van Vliet. So if you're available, please be prepared. You're recognized.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to be here. My name is Kim Warnicki. I proudly work with Gulf Coast Healthcare. We have 19 skilled nursing facilities in the state of Florida. I work with the group retention, recruitment, and training. And our big thing is this PCA program really helps us add to our frontline caregivers. Staffing has been one of the biggest challenges for us as a company, and I feel for the companies in the state of Florida. On average, there's 10 positions for CNAs open at every single Florida center at any given time, and staffing was a challenge even before the pandemic. When the pandemic hit, we had staff that quit on the spot, were out sick with COVID, and also we limited our CNAs because the testing sites closed. So individuals that were ready to test were unable to test because there were no testing sites available. This created an issue for our staff that remained in a very stressful environment and had to pick up those extra shifts so we could care for our elderly. We were super stoked when the Agency for Healthcare Administration put the PCA program in place.
Excuse me, ma'am. But your 1 minute has expired. Do you have 2 seconds worth of anything?
Okay. Well, it's a shame because I have a lot to tell you guys. Wicked passionate about this PCA program. My dad is currently in a skilled nursing facility, and there are PCAs that are a part of his care.
Well done. Thank you very much. Rashawn Van Vliet, are you here? Okay. Deborah Franklin, you will be after. And please, thank you, Ms. Franklin. Ms. Van Vliet, you are recognized.
Promise I'll be quick. I was a PCA for Bayside Health and Rehab, which is the Gulf Coast Healthcare. PCA program is great. I hope that we can keep it. I am now a CNA, and I have trained PCAs. I love having them there. It's a great help. I did the PCA program to become a CNA because I want to take care of my little boy that's back there. I hope to become a nurse. You have plenty of opportunity when you come from a PCA to a CNA, LPN nurse. But I just hope to become a nurse, and I hope that we do keep the bill because the PCAs are a good and great opportunity for us.
Thank you very much. Deborah Franklin, Florida Healthcare Association, followed by Kenneth Dipman.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Recognized.
I want to jump to just a couple things. First of all, I just had my analyst pull the state average for CNAs for the state of Florida. Proud to say is 2.72. 2.5 is the minimum, but our average is 2.72. Current policy, for quite a few years, has allowed NAs, after 16 hours of training in school, to work and be counted alongside. Adult learning statistics show that an adult learner learns better by seeing and doing, and that's what this program does. We talk about a free CNA program. It's not just a free program. She has to feed her child. This program allows you to start getting paid from day one. So it takes down barriers that allows people that did not have an opportunity to now have an opportunity to better their life, in addition to the critical, critical workforce shortage. I'm about quality of care. If quality had a blood color, that's what I bleed. We need the workforce to have quality of care outcomes.
Thank you, Ms. Franklin.
Thank you so much,
appreciate
Madam Chair.
Mr. Dipman, you're up, followed by Lynn Hearn. If you're here in the room, Ms. Hearn, please move forward. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe there's one question that we can answer today that would garner your support for this bill. And that question is, how deep is this hole, really? Said another way, how bad is the staffing shortage? There are 150,000 clear CNA licenses in the state of Florida. So there are about 150,000 CNAs. On ZipRecruiter, just one internet job board this morning, there were 25,266 CNA jobs that are looking for people in this state. What that means is there are about 18% more jobs in this state than there are CNAs available to work them. Is this bill the totality of the answer? No, it is not.
Sir?
Yes, ma'am. One sentence.
Time's up.
But it is the bill before you today, and I would encourage you to vote for it and support it today. Thank you.
Ms. Hearn, Department of Elder Affairs, followed by Laurie Briggs, who, if you're in the room, please move forward. You're recognized, Ms. Hearn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
I represent the Florida Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. Our mission is to receive and resolve complaints on behalf of residents in nursing homes. So we have a pretty different perspective than the providers that you're mostly hearing from. We share a lot of the same concerns as the union that Ms. Jackson brought forth. Our main concern is that these really barely trained individuals are being counted as full CNAs. So we would like to see an emphasis on creative solutions to the CNA problem. If the issue is the cost of the course, may have scholarships. If the issue is the location and the times, then it, maybe they can be provided on site. It's significant to me that you haven't heard any contrary testimony about the numbers that Ms. Jackson provided, which are all anecdotal. But if what we're hearing from the Florida Healthcare Association is that there's only 400 certified CNAs, excuse as a result of 2,000
Ms. Hearn, your minute. I'm sorry, your time's up.
Then that is not a successful pilot program.
Thank you.
We urge you to vote against this.
Lori Briggs, Florida Justice Association, followed by Barbara Devane. Ms. Devane, if you're in the room, please move forward. You're recognized, Ms. Briggs.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. I stand before you, like many of you, wearing multiple hats. Yes, I am an attorney with the Florida Justice Association, but I'm also a daughter and also a teacher. And so this bill brings forward to me several ideas or several conflicts about the proposal to the solution to the problem that we have. Yes, there's a shortage. When I was searching for care for my father, I was not looking for the least common denominator in the person who was going to care for my dad. I think as a teacher, as a former teacher, the idea is that this program is a training ground for CNAs, but we need to ensure that that is part of this bill. We also need to ensure, as Ms. Jackson pointed out, that the hours that are counted for PCAs are not one for one. We don't need a dilution in the care for the people who are the most vulnerable in this state. And the COVID pandemic has pointed to us that we need to be more concerned about the care that is provided to the most vulnerable Floridians, not less. And we urge you to vote against this bill. Thank you.
Barbara Devane, is Ms. Devane here? I don't see her. She is an opponent to the bill. Zane Smith waves in opposition. Representative Grant moves. We extend 15 minutes without objection. Show that motion adopted. We are now in debate. Representatives, do we have, I hope, brief debate on this bill? Representative Rainier, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will be brief. I have been working with Representative Garrison on this bill, I feel like since day one. And the reason that I supported this bill and the reason I got really excited and somewhat very passionate about this bill is because of the community that I represent. I represent a community that has often been underserved and overlooked, that hasn't had a lot of opportunities given to them, and people who are hardworking people, good people. And this program allows people from all walks of life to, if they want to better their lives, if they want to change their lives, to be able to do that in a way that is not cost prohibitive to them. And I can say of the bill sponsor, he has bent over backwards to accommodate folks and stakeholders, pretty much accepting every amendment that has been thrown his way, except for the 2.5, because it does create a different class between CNA trainees and PCAs. And his heart is in the right place to do things for, to do good things for all citizens of the state of Florida. I would just urge all members to vote up on this bill. It's a good bill. It is accomplishing what needs to happen. It's another path of workforce development. It's giving folks jobs, and it's meeting the shortage that helping cure the shortage that we have in the state of Florida. So I urge all members to vote up.
Thank you. Additional debate. Excuse me, Representative Tant, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you. I was compelled by this bill when it was first brought to me because of the addressing workforce issues and the fact that there's a huge gaping need. With unfilled positions, nobody's getting care anyway. So that is egregious, in my view, when we've got people in beds that need care, and we're going to literally say we don't want to help people get into the workforce to serve these people. Over the weekend, I received an email from a woman who is here in Tallahassee, and this is what she said. I support the PCA program and its expansion. I have been a CNA in a nursing home. Many of the things I did not require much more than common sense and respect for the resident. A PCA could do that so that the CNA can do more technical tasks, as well as the pages of documentation required by the state and the federal government. Will some nursing homes try to game the system? Maybe. But if they do, there's lots of watchdog groups, including ACCA, to stop it. The nursing home must still meet staffing laws for CNAs, and a PCA can only be counted for a limited time. Please don't burn the bridge, but instead make sure we are creating opportunities that don't have the ability to move into a structured CNA program. So based on that, I'm going to support this bill, and I'm going to ask you to. Further, I will say that I was happy to work with Representative Garrison on requiring rulemaking versus maybe taking a shot that rulemaking would occur. And I will work with you, Ms. Jackson, to make sure that we express the intent of this with ACCA to get clear rulemaking so that there is a differential between PCAs and CNAs. But I can't turn my back on the fact that there are people just not being served with this number of shortages and the fact that we have people who need the work. So that's where I am.
Additional debate. Seeing no additional debate, Representative Garrison, would you like to close on your bill?
Very briefly, Chair. Thank you. And thank you, members, for your comments. I would just say very quickly, there's not a single person that would testify against this bill or any stakeholder you're going to hear about that says PCA program is a bad thing. Every single person out here says they like it and they want to continue it. It's in place right now. What this bill does is takes the good program we have right now pursuant to executive order and makes it a great program pursuant to law. We've raised the standards to make sure that PCAs, before they can get on the floor, have the exact same minimum criteria that a CNA in a classroom setting has. There's no distinction, none whatsoever. We've kept it so that the PCA program, you can only do it once, period, for a four-year period of time. You can't hop from facility to facility. We've addressed every single issue that's been brought forward to concerns quality of care, everyone. And I ask for the favorable support. I appreciate the robust debate. My door is always open. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll close.
Thank you. Cheryl, please call the roll on CS for HB 485 and announce the vote.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Duran?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Koster?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Persons Mulica?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
F. Robinson?
Yes.
W. Robinson?
Yes.
Leroy?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Yarborough?
Yes.
Chair Burton?
Yes.
21 yeas, 0 nays.
So the bill reported favorably as amended. Representative Drake. Yes, sir, there you are. You are recognized to briefly, recognized to describe CS for HB 1565.
Madam Chair, thank you for a number of things. One, thank you for hearing the bill. Two, thank you for extending the meeting. And three, thank you for offering to get me up earlier than these scope of practice bills. However, I saw Representative Duran had a bill in commerce, and I thought, I want to stick around and vote for my friend's bill. Duran, I will not do that again. So I have a very non-controversial bill filed on behalf of the Department of Health. The entire bill is a cleanup bill with exception of Section 1, and it makes a modification to Florida Statutes 381.0045, which addresses the Targeted Outreach for Pregnant Women Act. It updates the section to reflect the larger variety of antiretroviral medication options available. And it also adds the need for mental health care services among the high-risk population targeted by the TOPWA and requires additional follow-up for education for HIV-exposed newborns. That's the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, do we have any questions on the bill? Seeing none, we have one amendment by Representative Drake. It's Amendment 098403. Representative, you're recognized to explain your amendment.
It is technical, I promise. It adds the language, or an agency approved by the United States Department of Education.
Thank you. Any questions on the amendment? We have no public testimony on the amendment. Show the amendment adopted without objection. We are now in public testimony on the bill. Ron Watson, Midwives Association of Florida, Ways in Support. Jody James, Florida CAN, Florida Cannabis Action Network, is a proponent. Kimberly Gershman is an opponent. And David Poole with the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, Waves in Support. We're now in debate on the bill as amended. Representative Drake, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Urge the adoption.
Thank you. Cheryl, please call the roll on CS for HB 1565 and announce the vote.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Botana?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Durant?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Sulu?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Parsons Malika?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
F. Robinson?
Yes.
W. Robinson?
Yes.
Leroy?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Yarborough?
Yes.
Chair Burton?
Yes.
21 yeas, 0 nays.
Show the bill reported favorably as amended. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well done in the race to the finish, members. I really have no announcements for the benefit of the group. Representative Garrison, good job on that really long bill. But I truly do appreciate, I have 10 minutes. We only used about 3 minutes of our 15-minute extension, but I want you to know that I really do appreciate thoughtful questions, and I have seen that consistently from members on both sides, wherever you sit in this room, at every committee meeting that we had, and thank you for that, because I think that makes the bill better. It helps with the presenters of all bills, and not only that, you oftentimes ask a question that somebody else has and helps them become better informed. So this concludes our agenda. Representative Garrison moves, we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.